to do that. And over time, we've heard from more and more people making their pledges that way. We have a new web address this time around. It's willpledge.org. So you can go there to our secure site and pledge online, or do it the traditional way by giving us a call at 244-9455. Either way, your support is very, very important to the future of this radio station. Well, this is Focus 580. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you listening this morning. In this hour of the show, we'll be doing something that we have been doing every month now on a Monday for a long, long time, and that's to invite people to call in with questions on home maintenance. Sitting in this morning as a special guest with us in the place of Hank Spies, we have Jeff Gordon. He is a research specialist in building technology at the Building Research Council of the U of I. That's under the general umbrella of the School of Architecture. Building research has been in business for quite a long time now and has been doing that kind of work, and we're really pleased that he could come and spend some time with us. If you have questions, I know he'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure, David.
We have a couple of people here ready to go. I thought just as a way of starting out, one thing I might ask you to talk a little bit about is furnaces and furnace maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we've had some cool temperatures, and I'm sure that a lot of people have had their heat on, so they at least know whether it works or not.
Right.
But past that, what's the difference between something that works and produces heat and a furnace that's operating at its intended efficiency level? And is there anything that an individual homeowner can do, or is this a matter of, well, you need to call, you know, whoever it is you deal with, or pick somebody to come and just do a kind of routine maintenance call?
I think in the fall, prior to every heating season, getting a serviceman in is the thing. Outside of changing of furnace filters, checking out the efficiency of a furnace is really requires a professional. They can measure flue gases, see how much oxygen, CO, is being produced, and attend to other maintenance items on the furnace or the boiler, lubricating things, adjusting the flame to get it right, to get the maximum efficiency out of it. There are orifices that need to be cleaned. The mix between the gas and the air has to be even, and they should also check out the venting system, make sure the venting system is in good shape.
One of the things that perhaps people already have seen, there have been articles in the newspapers and some discussion in the media about natural gas prices for this fall and winter going to be high.
Oh my,
at least
yes.
We're talking about significant increases. Can having that kind of inspection done to make sure that the furnace is operating properly, can that make a difference in how much gas you use?
Yes, yes. The efficiency of the burn gets the maximum BTUs, the maximum heat out of the gas that you burn. An inefficient burn will give you less heat out of the same amount of fuel. So yeah, that'll help. That'll help.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got some folks ready to go who have questions. Let's see what we can do here. We'll start out with someone in St. Joe, and this is line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I've got several questions regarding an asphalt shingle roof. It doesn't leak. It's 20 years old. And on the south side, there's some badly deteriorated tabs. Now, so considering Ed is predicting temps in the low to mid-70s this week, is it too late in the year to replace those shingles?
No, it shouldn't be too late. It may be too late to try to find someone who's going to do it.
Yeah.
But you should have decent weather into November to have a chance to do that.
Okay. And what are the temps that you kind of look for to make sure that the tabs seal correctly?
Right. Above freezing, certainly. The solar heat that you'll get on a roof, particularly on the southern exposure, will warm them up. Even if it's, you know, in the 50s, it'll warm it enough to seal the tabs.
Okay, great. And the other question is, I've just got, you know, a tab here and a tab there,
mm-hmm.
That are badly deteriorated, And what are the pros and cons of just removing the deteriorated tab and replace it with a new tab with roofing?
Right. Right. Well, you'll save the money of a new roof, but you won't save it for long. 20 years, you're getting towards the end life of your typical asphalt shingle roof. Somewhere 20, 25 years is the expected lifespan.
Right.
But it would probably get you through to spring.
Okay.
Okay,
very good. Thanks.
Right, thanks for the call. Just real quick to review why it is what the caller was asking about is important, that there's some adhesive on the bottom side of the shingles that helps hold them down, that is activated in a sense by the heat of the sun.
Right.
So, and if that does not happen, this is something we've certainly talked about in the past. If that doesn't happen, it is possible over the course of the winter for dirt and dust and stuff to get into there, and then they're not going to seal.
Right.
So what you want, I guess the bottom line is that even if somebody would put a roof on for you in, say, January, you probably don't want to do that. That's why part of the reason that the peak time for doing roofing is when it's warm.
When it's warm, yeah. There's a strip of like tar on the backside of the shingles, and so the heat of the sun glues them together and gives you, you know, a solid roof that the wind won't lift up and tear shingles apart.
Yeah. All right. So, but again, as long as it's at least you get a high of 50.
Above, because then you're going to be seeing temperatures in the 70s at that point from the solar gain. But sometime, you know, around the end of October, middle of November, you're not going to see roofing crews out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's take a caller in Aurora. This is line number two.
Yeah, could I ask him to repeat the last line? He said sometime in October, November, you're not going to what?
You're not going to see roofing crews. You're not going to see roofing crews working on houses in your neighborhood.
I have a guy coming next week. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where I have too much to do in the house.
Yeah.
But to get to my question, I'm repairing an old house, and it needs to have a window that is 30 and a quarter inches across by 80 inches down.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's an obsolete window.
Yeah.
You cannot buy it.
Well, you can order it, though.
Yeah, and that's what I wondered. This is the situation. I could order it. But which is better to do? Don't tell me I forgot my question. To have the window made, or to go with having the window, having it made 30 and a quarter by 80 inches and replacing the same one? Or having a shorter window put in, which my daughter wants to do. She doesn't like that it's so low to the ground, the window. So I know now that you don't have to put a storm in. The pane of glass is 7 7/8, so you don't need to put a storm in. Is that correct?
Well, there you probably mean it's a double glazed window. There's two layers of glass with an air space.
What? Probably need what?
What they mean when they say 7/8 is that there are two panes of glass with an airspace in between them, and you don't need storm window in that case. With respect to your question,
should we put the shorter one in? Then what do we do with the bottom? How do you, you know, account for the last?
Right.
It might be what, about 10 inches?
Right. In that case, you need a carpenter who can reframe the opening. Okay, and raise the bottom sill and make the proper rough opening to...
Oh, so you need a real carpenter.
I would think so, yeah. And then you need to both finish off that space on the inside with some drywall and tape it up, as well as the outside, whatever kind of siding you have, to make it look right. So it's
almost better to put the same size window in and have it made.
Yeah, to get one off the shelf, is going to require a carpenter, and then you got to add that expense to it. And you're probably not going to save any money doing that.
Well, I'm not thinking of saving money. I just, well, I am in a way, but I just, you know, it's just such a quandary.
Yeah.
My daughter does want the window not as low as it is. It's very low to the ground, the window.
Well, is it your house or hers?
What?
Is it your house or her house?
Well, it's mine.
Okay, well, you decide.
No, well, I'm just, you know, I just, well, I'm also trying to think of, you know, from a standpoint of carpentry and
right.
you know, somebody like you giving advice. Okay, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, thanks for the call. This is our monthly program on home maintenance. I mean, we've been doing every month here on Focus 580 for a long time. And if you have some sort of problem, something needs to be fixed, you're not quite sure how to approach it, maybe you're thinking about making some changes in your home or doing some remodeling, and you have questions, basic questions, you can give us a call. Our guest here this morning in this part of the show, Jeff Gordon. He is a research specialist in building technology at the Building Research Council of the University of Illinois. 333, that's our pledge line I was about to do for you. If you're going to call in here to the show, 333-9455, same number as always. And we also have the toll-free line, which is 800-222-9455. And you'll come right here to the program, and if you have questions, I know Jeff will do his best. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. And next up, we have someone on our line 4, someone from Indiana. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Certainly an apropos time for this. My aunt lives in a small house. It's quite old, so it has the high ceilings. Two of the rooms have the ceiling fans. One's for the living room, which has two transoms that feed air. And the bedroom has two also. And I had a, I guess, quote, unquote, an engineer come in and check things out in the furnace. Found out a lot of things were wrong. They were fixed. Was also told that the furnace is probably twice as large as it should be for the size of the house. It does not have a fan. It's pure gravity-fed. And what I'm concerned about is she is on a very tight budget. And she's under the opinion that if she starts shutting off rooms with the transoms, that it will save cost. I want to know if that's actually true. I know it's a rule of thumb, but does it really work is what I'm interested in. And since it's such an old furnace and has no fan, I know they talk about turning your thermostat down like to 55 at night. And I was concerned about that the recovery on such an old furnace that just uses gravity might be more expensive than just leaving it at a different temperature. So I was interested in that. Secondly, she has a large window size air conditioner, and I've heard conflicting reports about whether you should cover it over the winter or just leave it, you know, sticking out in the air. I wondered about that. And I'd like to know, if you could, sort of a general rule of thumb for how much it would cost or should cost when somebody comes in and checks out your furnace, you know, and maybe cleans the air, the gas jets mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. And how often should it be done? This was just done in the last 2 months, also had the house insulated, you know, in preparation for the wonderful natural gas prices. If you could get anything along those lines, would be really be appreciated. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There's a number of questions in there. Generally speaking, setting back the thermostat at night will save energy. The less the furnace runs, the better. One way to approach that is a worthwhile investment, I believe, is to get a setback thermostat. Okay, you can get a programmable thermostat that allows you to tell the heating system when to come on and when to come off. You can set it for a couple of different delays during the day, set it day by day, set it up for an entire week. What that offers you is maximum comfort as well as savings, because you can heat the house just before you wake up and turn it off before you go to bed and really not have to touch it. So yeah, a setback does save money. The less the furnace runs, the less fuel you'll burn. With regard to closing off rooms, you have to be careful with when you're closing off rooms in the heating season. You don't want any room to get so cool that you can have condensation problems. And I've seen that happen where a room gets completely shut off. If it gets too cool in there, you're going to have moisture problems on exterior walls and windows. You start to see mold bloom. So you got to be careful in not making any room too cold. If you have a window air conditioner and you don't want to take it out and put it in each heating season or cooling season, I think it's best to cover it. There are a lot of veins and air inlets in them, and you'll cut down on air infiltration if you cover that. Good job on insulating the house. I hope I got your questions. Did I leave any out?
I think the one that you didn't touch on was the caller was asking about round figures. How much should you expect to pay for a furnace inspection, and then how often?
Okay. Find a service person you like. Usually what they'll want to do, and it's not a bad idea, is you set up a maintenance contract that will give you an annual inspection. And before each heating season, once a year is the time to have it inspected. But the maintenance contract will also usually have some deals in it where if you do have a problem, they'll show up. You're on their list. You have a partnership with them. Maybe even a break on some costs. It's that's the way to go.
Okay.
How much it costs, it's going to be a couple hundred dollars for sure.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, again, with this question of shutting off the heat to particular rooms in the house as a way of saving money. Certainly there are maybe some rooms in the house you would want to have cooler and some places you want to have warmer, depending on, you know, maybe you want to have the place where your living room is, you want it to be warm, your bedroom, maybe you want it to be a little bit cooler. Mm-hmm. But I guess I wouldn't think that shutting off a couple of rooms completely that you don't use is really going to make much difference in terms of how much the furnace runs. I wouldn't think that would make much difference at all, in fact.
No, it shouldn't make that much difference. The room you shut off isn't going to have the thermostat in it. So it won't make that much difference. And if it gets, you know, so cold that it's the room temperatures get below 50 in a room, you're going to start having moisture problems.
Right. Okay, but that's probably the one real thing to bear in mind. You certainly don't want to have moisture problems because then, as you say, that could get you into some mold issues that can really not only could be that be really attractive, but can have really can have health impact on people as well.
Yeah. Anecdotally, I worked on a project studying mold and moisture in housing in Chicago, and we looked at condensation problems, and the house where we had the most condensation problems was really one room that was occupied by one of the family members who liked it cold, kept windows open, shut off the air distribution to his room. His room temperature tracked the outside better than it tracked the inside, and that was the room where we had condensation problems and mold.
We are talking this morning about home maintenance, something that we do monthly on this show. Jeff Gordon here is sitting in with us this morning. He works at the Building Research Council of the University of Illinois, part of the School of Architecture, and has been doing this kind of thing for quite a long time, studying these issues, and really glad that he could be here with us to answer questions. We have a full bank of callers, and we hope that folks would not mind maybe waiting a minute or two while we give you another important piece of information. And that is to talk about just how important to WYLL listener support is. The support of people who listen to this radio station. And we know because we hear from them, we get a chance to talk with them every day. There are a lot of folks listening. And we also regularly get comments from people saying that they value the programs on the station. Well, if you do, now is the time for you to step up and do your part, particularly if maybe you've been listening for a while. Maybe you have just discovered WYLL and you have never made a contribution. Now is the time for you to step forward and do that because we need the support of as many of the listeners as we can possibly get. Right now is the time for you to call. It's not the number for the show. It's a different number. It's 244-9455. Sitting here in the studio with us is Jack Brighton.
Hello.
He is the guy who oversees our web operations in WILL. And, of course, you've heard him on the air. He frequently sits in for me on Focus 580. And going back a few years now, he was producer of Focus 580. So we like to refer to him as our producer emeritus.
That's right.
So how's it going for you today?
Well, it's going great. I'm enjoying hearing the show, and Jeff Gordon is just terrific talking about home maintenance. You know, this is the kind of show for do-it-yourselfers, and actually, the show itself and the station, indeed, overall, is a do-it-yourself kind of radio station. So you got to fund. We have to fund it with the help of the people who derive the most benefit from it, and that's you. So please respond right now. We're asking you to pledge in support of WILL. 217-244-9455 to call our pledge line. And if you haven't ever pledged to this show, you've enjoyed it many times. We hope that you'll take the next step and support it with your financial contribution. 244-9455 right now. Our membership director, Rita Schulte, is with us in Pledge Central. And we have quite a goal to reach today, Rita, and quite a challenge overall for the drive.
Overall, yeah. Yes, we do. This is our fall fund drive, and we want to encourage you to call 217-244-9455. For those of you who are in the queue to talk with our guests today, you could go to willpledge.org, which is our new address for making contributions online. We have a goal to reach $46,000 today, and we are at $38,000, so we've got a great start. You know, the gap between federal funding and personal funding here on WILL is growing and continues to grow. 47% of the money that is used to provide programs on the station came from donors last year, and we expect that percentage to increase over the years as federal funding and state funding becomes a little more level or shaky.
Well, that's really astonishing, isn't it?
It really is. But you know what? In that same time period, as donor support became more important, donor response by the station grew, and the offerings and the style and the sophistication of what the station has been able to bring has increased and improved, and we're looking now for entrepreneurial ventures, like some of the things that Jack is able to do with the web, in order to help fund the programs on the radio and on the web that you tell us you appreciate. We'd like to say thank you to people who have already called in with their pledge. We've had a caller already this morning from Charleston who appreciates Focus 580, and actually two callers from Charleston. You're reaching Charleston today, guys.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, we really want you to call right now with your pledge, because right now I'm looking at the phone lines and they're blank. So, you know, we've got volunteers standing by. It literally takes a minute of your time to make a pledge call, and we really like to hear from you.
Right.
And you can tell us what you like or don't like about the station. It's all fair game. But we really need your financial contribution during this, you know, this fall pledge drive. Once every fall and usually in the spring as well, we come on the air. Otherwise, we don't bother you with these things. But right now, we need to. We need you to bother us with your phone call, 244-9455, to make a pledge.
All right. Thank you very much, Jack and Rita. We'll talk again a little bit later. I want to get to the callers who have been waiting patiently to talk with our guest, Jeff Gordon. The number now to call into the show to Focus 580, I don't want to confuse you with too many numbers, but I want to give that number again. Same number as always. It's 222. See, now I'm the guy who's confused. Let me try again. 333-9455. I need to write them down for myself. 333-9455. I've only been saying that for the last 25 years. For Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. You want to call into the show? We do also have a toll-free line. That is 800-222-9455. Okay, let's go back to the phones here. Urbana is next. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm faced with the possibility of having to replace the sewer line, and I've got a lot of questions. You only do this once in your life, I hope. We had the sewer rooted out. There were trees, roots that had gotten in there, and 6 weeks later, it had stopped up again, and when they came out to check it out, there weren't roots. It was something very soft that was flushed. They did an interior inspection of the line, and it's tile. Most of it is fine. There is one place, and about the same place, he thought, where whatever it is got caught. Looks like there's mud, so the tile has slipped. Can that be replaced, just that section? I mean, is it worthwhile doing that? Or should we really consider doing the whole sewer line? That's question number one. And the second one is, some people, I gather, will dig a trench and then replace the line. And there are several people who suggest they can do it trenchless. What is that, and does that work as well as digging the whole thing up and replacing the line?
Wow, that's a new one on me. Sewer lines are not an area of expertise. And frankly, I don't know if you can just replace a section, or even if that would save you much. You're going to have to dig a pretty big hole to get to the sewer line to begin with, and you may just consider taking care of the problem. Tile sewers will eventually give way, have root problems, and collapse. So that's the situation you're in. As far as a trenchless sewer line, boy, that's a new one on me. I've seen electric wires and other things, irrigation systems put in trenchless. It's hard for me to imagine a sewer line being put in trenchless. So I'm at a loss on that one.
Yeah. But in general, if we have the whole thing done, which we probably will, because there are other places that look like they may go at some point, what are the kinds of things that we need to really consider?
Well, get a contractor you trust. You're not going to be doing it yourself.
No.
It's not that kind of a job. So get someone you trust, ask him for references, and make sure that his previous customers are happy. And then you can expect to get a good job, I think.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck. Let's go on here to Champagne is the next person. Line 2. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I am calling with a question I get, I'm sure you get a lot. It's about gutters. And I have a really, really tall roof, a complicated roof. In fact, I think if you're the same Jeff Gordon, I think you live right down the street from me.
Oh, okay.
And you know there are a lot of big, tall houses in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
But in any case, I've been telling my husband for years he's going to break his neck trying to clean out the gutters, and I guess he finally agrees with me. And he's asked me to find a solution. And I've been looking on the internet, and I'm not finding anything that is real helpful. What I wonder is, should we go with some sort of shield over our gutters,
mm-hmm.
or just what, so that we don't have to clean them out so often?
Right.
Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, there's some new products on the market in just the last few years. One of them goes by the name of Gutter Helmet, okay,
mm-hmm.
which uses mechanical properties of basically your gutters are covered, but there's a little lip that the water runs down and into the gutter without really allowing any leaves. You know, there's different screens and stuff you can put on them and grills. My experience on Healy Street is that they keep out the leaves but not the seeds, so I still have to get up there and clean them. But I think the Gutter Helmet, and there's a few others like that on the market, would work. You would have to get up there and install them. You need to slide them under the first row of shingles. You may need some help with that, someone who's better equipped for getting up there.
I don't think we would do that ourselves. I mean, I hope we won't.
Yeah.
So is there any place where you can read up about the different solutions for gutters? I mean, there used to be a place on the web. Actually, I thought it came through the Building Research Council, but I couldn't find that anymore.
Okay. Well, I don't know offhand. Try Googling Gutter Helmet and see what you get.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. I guess the one thing that I have heard about some of these systems, and that one in particular, while it a lot of people think that it works really well, do be prepared for the cost,
uh-huh.
because it's expensive.
Is it?
Okay. But on the other hand, you know, if that would save you the cost of hiring somebody periodically to clean them out,
right.
Or the risk of getting up on a ladder. And
that's
You know, I'm not, you know, I have a two-story house. I'm not going to do that. I am not going to do that. So I have to pay somebody a couple of times a year to do that. So, you know, in the long run, combine those two things and
Yeah, let alone what an accident would cost you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now, although I think it's also true that these things stuff still can get in there, and they do periodically, maybe not as often, but still periodically, you need to have them cleaned out. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. I've taken a look at them, and from what I can see, it would take an awful long time. I mean, it's a very small opening for the water, and they use the. Cohesive property of water's sticky, okay, and so to run under a lip and drop in, it looks to me like they'd really protect from debris.
Okay, and are these now, some of these also are hinged so that you can actually lift them up and clean out the gutter if you want to. Is that particular kind?
The ones I'm thinking of, I haven't seen hinge, but there are some grills and screens to put over that do hinge like that.
Yeah, the problem with those things is, though, as you say, that anything that's got some kind of holes in it, stuff sticks, particularly the spinner deals that come off the maple tree, they will get in there, and then eventually they'll get all clogged up.
Yeah, you know, I strongly in favor of people taking care of gutter systems. The gutter systems are a guard from keeping our foundations dry. There's a direct connection there. Gathering all the water that falls on a roof, and it's a lot of water, literally thousands of gallons in a good rainstorm, and getting it away from our houses, capturing it, taking it to grade, getting away from the houses is the one essential thing, the first thing to look at if you have basement and crawl space water problems.
Yeah. All right. Next, our caller is in Champaign, line 3.
Hi.
Hello.
My question has to do with siding. I'm looking at getting siding put on the house, but the house is a very dark color wood now, and it's the wood is vertical. And siding is all pretty much horizontal and much lighter colored. So I was wondering if you knew of any computer program where I could scan in a picture of my house and then put different sidings on it to see how it will look.
Oh, boy. No, I don't know of a program like that. There may be some there are some computer programs I've seen in stores for designers. And that feature may exist among those. But I don't know of anything on the web or anything.
Okay. I checked at one store, and they said maybe the paint department might have something, but they didn't have anything in siding.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that there are, as you said, I think that there are some, if you're trying to decide what color to paint your house,
right. Mm-hmm.
there are programs that you can use that. And I guess essentially that would be kind of the same. At least if you're trying to pick out a color, you could see what color would look like.
Yeah, I don't know if there would be, you know, vertical versus horizontal options there.
I just hate to spend all the money on siding and then hate the way my house looks when I'm done.
Yeah, sure. Why are you considering new siding?
Well, it's either staining it again or siding it again, or siding it, period. And so, you know, the cost of staining it every, you know, 6 or 7 years versus getting it sided hopefully once in our tenure.
Yes.
Is kind of the way I've been thinking. We've been here 16 years and we've stained it once.
Uh-huh.
Desperate now to either be stained or sided.
Right,
so.
Right. So it's to break out of the maintenance cycle then?
More,
Yeah.
The cost of siding it is probably double to triple what it costs to stain it. But on the other hand, if we'd have to stain it every so often, then eventually plus siding, I think, will give us a little more insulating value.
You know, they often put at least a thin layer of foam under vinyl siding,
Right, and that's another thought, is that it'll make the house a little more heat. And cooling.
Well, good luck with that. You're just going to have to use your imagination if you can't find a program and try to picture it in your mind.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Lafayette, and this is our line number four. Hello. Oh. Yes.
And make sure the siding is done by someone really knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get new nightmares. My gas furnace ventilates through two pipes in the foundation, but should I still get in regular inspections of the venting up from the gas water heater?
Yeah, if you have a furnace man who looks at your furnace every year, have him take a look at that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably it's just a stovepipe essentially.
Yeah.
So your gas furnace is direct vent, mm-hmm. and but your water heater is still what's known as atmospherically vented. That is, it takes air from inside the house to vent. Right, and you want to make sure that's in good shape. You don't want to backdraft that thing, okay, and allow the carbon monoxide into your house. So it should be good in good shape, not have any holes or gaps.
Carbon monoxide raises the main question here.
Okay.
A customer of mine wants a smoke detector in a back porch that gets pretty cold in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Will that work?
Yeah, that'll work.
And do smoke and monoxide detectors just wear out and have to be replaced every few years?
I'm not quite sure about that. I think I've certainly heard that about carbon monoxide detectors, though, going out of calibration. Yeah.
Well, this has no calibration, but just a green light.
Yeah, none of them are self-calibrated by the owner. They're calibrated at the factory.
Okay. All right. Am I right in thinking that the smoke in the house is light and rises, and the monoxide is heavy and creeps on the floor?
Oh, gosh. I don't know the relative density of carbon monoxide. I'm not sure.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. This is something that I wonder about because I think for the first time, I think maybe it was last year, the year before, I don't know, I have a little wood stove, and I had a guy come in to clean out the chimney for the wood stove,
right.
who happened to be a firefighter.
Uh-huh.
And he also looked around. He asked me, he said, do you have smoke alarms? And I said, yes, we have one on every level of the house. He says, that's good. He says, do you have a carbon monoxide detector? Mm-hmm. And I said, actually, no, we don't. And he said, well, we really think that that's a good idea. So after this guy was there, I dutifully went to the hardware store and got one of the ones that plugs into the wall, so it works
right.
So it's always power, works out of wall outlet. And I guess the thing that I wasn't exactly sure about was where was the best place to put it. Because I didn't want it to be near the wood stove, and they say that you shouldn't put it in the kitchen because you don't want it picking up little traces of carbon monoxide from your gas range,
right.
Which apparently it would. So I settled on one corner of the dining room and hope that it will pick the right spot.
That you pick it up. Yeah. The gases generally mix pretty well in a house. There is some stratification, but there's also air, convection going around all the time. So if you started to see high levels of CO, I think the floor would see them as well as the ceiling. We have a project at the Building Research Council that's related to this, and I wanted to mention it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing a study of unvented gas fireplaces. These things can be bought. You can put them anywhere you can put a gas line because you don't require a chimney. They're also advertised as 99.9% efficient, which is, of course it is because nothing's going up the chimney. But there's been a concern, a great concern in the building science community about the safety of these things. And so the Building Research Council has a research project to look at that. And we will be looking for volunteers who have vent-free gas fireplaces to get in their homes over the next two winters, spend about 3 to 4 days there measuring gas concentrations. There's a financial incentive involved. And so anyone who's interested, has one of these appliances and would like to work with us, feel free to call us at the BRC. I'm somewhat hesitant to give out a phone number, given all the phone numbers that are giving out here. But to be quite clear, this is for participation in our vent-free gas fireplace study. Call the BRC at 244-7111.
Okay. And this is, I'm glad you mentioned that, because as you say, that it's people like them. I mean, they like the aesthetic value. And some people also might think, well, that would be, it's an additional heat source.
Yes,
so that
it
might
is.
Be a good thing. And they would say, oh, well, ventless. Hey, that's great. You know, that means we can just practically put it any place we want. But as you say, I think there has been some concern about it. And the concern is with emissions.
The concern is with emissions. Right. That's right. All combustion is going to produce at least traces of carbon monoxide, and if the combustion isn't very good, much more. There's also a concern with NO2, nitrogen dioxide, as a respiratory irritant. And up till now, there hasn't been a good field study to get numbers. There's just been a couple of little things done that raise some concern. And so the BRC is taking it on and trying to put real numbers on what the exposures are.
Great. So that would, so if people want, if they're interested, if they have a ventless gas fireplace,
right,
and they would like to participate, and in fact, you know, maybe even for their own peace of mind,
we'll give them the results too. We'll let you
like
know what you're seeing in the house,
whether or not that's possible. You know, there's possibly some problem attached to it. So
right.
Very good.
Okay.
And 244-7111. That's the U of I Building Research Council.
That's right.
All right. We'll try and get at least one more caller, maybe a couple. Let's go next to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Good morning. We are in the process of replacing our boiler, and we have been given two alternatives. One is Trinity, which is a cast iron machine, and the other one is the Peerless Pinnacle, which is stainless steel. And I wonder if you could comment on which one is perhaps better than the other.
Oh, I couldn't comment on that. I'm not familiar with each of the units.
Uh-huh.
They will have an efficiency rating associated with each one?
Yes, 92%. That's basically both of them.
Okay, that's very good.
That's quite good, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now, the second question is, we have a house which has 2,450 square feet, and what kind of BTU should we consider? We have been given here kind of differing data.
Oh, that's a calculation that that can be made, but it can't be made over the radio. You calculate the heat loss. They count up.
Okay.
I mean, you can do a really good job. Count up the windows. Know the insulation levels.
Okay.
Calculate the heat loss. They use something called degree days to determine the BTUs.
So the contractor could do that.
Yeah, the contractor should be able to do that, sure.
And some of them recommended that we would get a water heater at the same time so that it could increase the efficiency, the energy saving, and so on, which you know, would use some of the hot water from the boiler.
Right. Yeah, that is done, to get a combination unit and use the boiler both to heat your home and the radiators, mm-hmm. as well as to get hot water for use.
Right. Now, this would be recommended even if our boiler, the water heater still is working properly.
Yeah.
So it is advisable to do it at the same time.
I think there's some efficiency to be gained from that in having it integrated.
Sure.
I knew one family who put one in that had a lot of people in the house.
Yeah.
And they had a conflict in the mornings. That is, a lot of people wanted to take showers while the heater was trying to heat the house,
right.
and also heat the, you know, there was like six kids in the house, and there was a conflict there. And they ended up getting a water heater and breaking up the integrated system. But if you don't have that problem, it'll probably work all right.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Okay. Oh,
thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
When you said breaking up, I was afraid you were going to say they got a water heater and broke up the family.
I think the family stayed together.
Okay. Very good. Let's see. Next, I believe it'd be a caller in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question about radiator heat. We're looking at trying to purchase a home out of town, and it's an older home from 1910. It has radiator heat, So the issues that we wanted some advice on are, one, how efficient or how expensive does radiator heat tend to be? And then also, how difficult or challenging of a project can it be if we would need to convert some of the actual radiators to the floor baseboard type heating to free up space so we don't have a bulky radiator in some of the rooms?
Okay. With regards to efficiency, it's quite similar to forced air, so mm-hmm. that's not a big issue. I really like radiator heat myself. Mm-hmm. I find it warm and cozy, and you don't have air currents running the house from forced air. It's not that big a deal to do a conversion to baseboards.
Mm-hmm.
There's two different kind of baseboards that you can get. One is a fin tube. Okay, and you probably know what those look like. There's a pipe running through it, and these little fins that radiate. Though they also make cast iron baseboards. I think they both work well. I think the advantage of the cast iron is that they don't have to mess with the water temperature because they work just like a radiator. Whenever you're doing a replacement or change out of part of a heating system on radiators, it requires you to drain the system, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you wanted to do that, you'd probably want to pretty much decide what changes you want to make all at once and get them done once it's drained. And you need a good plumber heating guy to do that, who knows what he's doing. But it's not that tough to do a conversion.
Okay. And as far as cost, would radiator heat be comparable to forced air then? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Okay, and do you have a general idea as far as let's say if you have a radiator room that's 12 by 14 or something, and we want to convert it to the baseboard, do you have any ballpark idea of what the cost might be for something like that?
I'm not sure. You'd have to price it out with a contractor. It's not going to be cheap because they're going to be there a couple of days.
Okay.
So figure a couple of days of a plumber anyway.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll try to do one more at least. We'll go to line 3, Champagne. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a problem because I bought a large brick house last year, and I didn't notice at the time, but there was a tree near the top of the chimney. And, then the chimney person, when I had them come, they noticed this, and they took it out. At least they said they did. And then I've noticed just a few days ago, I looked up there again, and the tree's back. And so I'm wondering, how dangerous is this, and how, what do I do about this?
Where exactly is it growing?
Well, it's literally within the chimney, and it's coming up from within the chimney near the top of the house. It's a two-story or almost three-story house. And I burned fire in the fireplace. Doesn't seem to be any problem, but I did notice there's kind of a... Well, I was sort of lazy about getting rid of the ash, and so there's sort of a smell of ash in the house, but I thought maybe that was related to that. And so I'm kind of worried whether there's some kind of, I don't know, with that tree up there.
To the extent that it may block the draft, that's a problem, though.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you really got to respect that life force, don't you, if a tree wants to grow in a chimney.
Yeah, it's incredible. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get up there next time you're up there, mm-hmm. snap it off and maybe squirt a little Roundup on it. Maybe that'll take care of it for good.
Okay.
But that is that's a remarkable story.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, we're going to have to finish there. My apologies. We have a couple of calls we can't take, but we're here just at the end of the time. We want to say thanks to our guest for this morning, for this first hour, Jeff Gordon. He's a research specialist in building technology at the Building Research Council of the U of I. And again, if you're interested in participating in this study that he mentioned, looking at ventless gas fireplaces and their safety, you can call them 244-7111.
Thanks,
Thank
David.
You. Thanks very much. Programming here on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers box lunches for professional gatherings or casual lunchtime gatherings. I should say meetings, professional meetings, or casual lunchtime gatherings. Starway Fields, 328-1655. The broadcast also made possible with support from the U of I Office of the Chancellor, supporting the Campus Charitable Fund Drive. Every year, contributions from U of I employees on the Urbana-Champaign campus help support 11 social service agencies and other nonprofit organizations. Information on how to give and how your donations will help our community is on the web at ccfd.uiuc.edu. Well, right now I have to get in the pitch for another nonprofit organization, and that is WILL. This radio station relies to a very great extent on the contributions of individual listeners to keep the programming on the air. We have some folks who have been very generous and supported us for many years, loyally, year after year, and to them we want to say thanks. Maybe it's time for you to renew your membership, and it would be great if you do that now. But we're also reaching out to people who listen and, for whatever reason, have not yet contributed. Now is the time for you to do that. Give us a call at 244-9455. We try to put programming on this station that will enhance your life, and you could keep it here on AM 580 by making a financial contribution. Rita Schulte is in Pledge Central. She's our membership director. Can you give us a little update on how things are going on this first day, first weekday, I should say?
Our first weekday, we can thank 387 callers for having called in so far since we started on Saturday. And we've raised $38,200 toward our goal of $100,000. $60,000 by the end of this fund drive, which is this coming Saturday. You know, I was listening to the program and it occurred to me that all of the scary news out there about home heating prices and the cost of fuel and everything is going up, and if the winter is bad and on and on and on. How much do you think it is worth to you out there to have access to someone who can talk to you about your furnace before you talk to the guy who's going to come in and fix it for you? I think that's got quite a lot of value. It gave me a lot of vocabulary I maybe didn't understand before, so I can talk to my serviceman more intelligently and ask about how I can save a little money. And if you are appreciative of being able to function in that space a little bit better, a little more knowledgeable, or maybe if you're doing it yourself, you have a better grasp of it, we hope you'd like to share a little of that windfall with WYLL as the source of the inspiration. 217-244-9455 is the number to call with a $40 pledge, and we'll send you a year subscription to Patterns Magazine.
Throughout the year, we try to do a variety of kinds of programs on here on this show. We do programs that we hope will teach you things, will give you something to think about, will stretch your brain a little bit. And then we also do shows like this that we think of as being to try to help you with the nuts and bolts issues of everyday life. Home maintenance is one of those. And in the next hour, we'll be talking about health and healthcare, and that's another. Places, we're here to create a place for you to get some answers, we hope. At least it's a place to start. If you have basic questions, we can help. If you have benefited from this program or others, either getting answers to questions or just learning something new, once again, we need to have you to be a full participant in the whole enterprise of public broadcasting, and that's by being a financial supporter. You can pledge online, willpledge.org, or you can call 244-9455. We're going to break for an update on the markets. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706.